Michelle Carpingo. And besides teaching childbirth classes, I also do a fair amount of physical therapy in a variety of settings. One of the things I do is treat handicapped children, and their ages range anywhere from 4 months up to about 17 years of age. I also serve on the screening clinic in Nebraska for the Agency of Services for Crippled Children. So I do see a lot of children of varying degrees of physical well-being, we might put it that way. The title that was up on the board that we plan to talk about this afternoon was Helping Parents Enhance Their Child's Physical Well-Being. And I hope that we can kind of explore this area together. And I hope you came with some questions in mind. Certainly as children grow, one of the key contributors to their sense of well-being is their comfort with and their ability to express and use their body. And while a child's psychosocial development, their intellectual development, and their spiritual development are all very crucial, we really are going to just kind of narrow it in this afternoon and talk about their physical development. I'm going to start back to where we were yesterday, in a sense, and talk about prenatal, the prenatal environment, just for just a second, because that's where it all starts. I want you to just keep that in mind. I realize for those of you that already have children, that's in the past. But just for future reference, tuck it in the back of your head. Maybe when your children get to childbearing age, that the basic environment that sets and helps predispose that child in terms of their physical and emotional being really starts prenatally. And the more we study and the more we find out about some of the impacts that happen in her uterine, the more we realize that there is some things going on here that the mother can really make a difference in terms of the environment she's creating inside. And one of the key areas I'm hitting at, of course, is nutrition. What she eats and drinks, what she smokes or doesn't smoke, what she takes medication-wise, all of those things cross the placental barrier and have varying degrees of impact on the child. Now, we're not going to get into a lot of pros and cons on those kinds of issues unless you bring it up as a question later on, and I'd be very willing to explore that. But I want to just at this point touch real briefly on the fact that their physical being starts prenatally. When we talk about the next step, we have to talk about birth itself. And that was, of course, our focus yesterday, where we really concentrated on trying to enhance the birth environment and the birth experience so that it is not only more physically and emotionally satisfying for the mother and the father, but also safer and healthier for the child. And one of the implications there being, that research has documented, is, of course, that the less medication mom has, the healthier for both she and the baby. That doesn't mean there aren't situations where medication is appropriate or, in fact, very helpful, because those do arise. But by and large, the less mom has, the more responsive that baby's central nervous system is going to be at birth. The better their reflexes are going to be, the more alert they're going to be. Their sucking instinct will be stronger in those early hours, and they'll be more responsive. If the child happens to have the misfortune of having other complications at birth, like difficulties in breathing or a very traumatic, prolonged labor, the addition of medication on top of that only makes it more difficult for the child. So in a sense, the more alert and responsive that baby is at birth, not only is that vital just in terms of their ability to start breathing and working externally in their environment, but also it has some impacts on how they are able to then spend time with their parents. And that's the second part of the birth environment I want to touch on lightly, is the whole issue of what we now call bonding. And by the word bonding, I mean how parents become attached to their children. Just as you, when you met your spouse, most of us were not instantly infatuated. It was a growing process. I think that happens with our children too. In essence, we kind of fall in love with them as the days and weeks go along. There are days that love gets tested, I'll agree, but by and large, that's certainly true. And one of the ways of enhancing that has been proven in recent years is the amount and timing of that early parent-infant contact. There's two very important men that have been doing a lot of things in this area. One is Marshall Kloss from Case Western Reserve, and the other is T. Barry Brazelton, who's a physician. He's written a lot of works, all of them which I would recommend for parent reading. But the thing that these two men in particular have really done some statistical research with is the effect of bonding. In specific, if the baby and mom and dad are allowed contact time within the first hour, if there are tangible differences, as opposed to the child who's brought to the mom 6 hours later or 12 hours later, and their data says, yes, there is, if there is an optimal time for bonding. Now, I realize that for some parents who, let's say, had a baby that had to go to the nursery right away for oxygen or extra warmth, or who had a preemie who had to go in an incubator, they get all uptight. I didn't have my first hour with that child. And what studies more recently are saying that bonding is not just that first hour experience. That's important, but it's an ongoing experience that we have with our child. And the key ingredient to the bonding is the touching, that you have a chance to hold, caress, and cradle your child. And that's true for both husband and wife. What tends to happen is the more that opportunity is available to parents, the more emotionally involved they come with the child. You find those parents tending to talk and babble more with their children, play with them more, and Claus goes even so far as to say that those children tend to talk sooner, to be more responsive, and he goes all the way to say sometimes the data indicates they have a higher IQ. Now, I think that's stretching a little further along the line. But the implication is that the two will feed on each other. In those early weeks, as the parent responds more and more to the child starts to do the same. And that's an upward spiral of involvement. It's a lot of fun when they start to coo and smile in response to you, and the spiral feeds on itself. Okay, we need to get out of the birth environment itself and go just a little further and talk about what is now developing in programs called infant stimulation. And these are simply, I think, awarenesses on medical people as well as parents' part that the baby's sensory system is vital and key to their physical and their neurological development. There was a very tragic study done many, many years ago where someone, just for an experiment's sake, put babies in a nursery and they were fed and changed and bathed and well cared for in a mechanical sense, but they were not cuddled or held, talked to or caressed. Those infants failed to thrive, and some of them in fact died. And what the implication of that study, of course, is that the touching, again, is so very vital. And the auditory interaction between you talking with them, even though they don't talk or babble back yet, but that whole business of touching. And Ashley Montague has a very nice thick little volume on touching that has some very fascinating implications. Because it's really the baby's skin that is their initial and major sensory system that they learn from. That's where they get their most input as a newborn child and in the early months. They're amazingly also auditory, even at birth and in the early weeks, that they will respond to sounds. And as we start to play and enjoy our new baby, I think it's good to realize the five senses and provide those opportunities and exposures to your child. Skin is, of course, the one we've touched on. Visually, they will respond better than we often realize within about an 18-inch to 24-inch range from their face. They can focus, and their favorite thing to look at is a human face. If you want to put anything interesting in their crib, you can put happy faces or whatever, and they'll respond better to that than to some abstract or flower or pig or anything else that gets put in there. They also respond to red faster than any other color. That's their favorite color. And this is true and well into the first half of your life. I think providing music, and of course your voice is their favorite sound. And it doesn't take them long to distinguish between mom and dad. And they do that probably in three ways: by the tone of your voice, by how your body feels around them, and by your smell. And they, believe me, they can distinguish. They know which one's got the milk if mom's nursing, and they know which one's uptight and's had a long day, and dad comes home and takes the kid, and the kid quiets down because he's not uptight. He hasn't struggled with the child all day. They sense all those things. I think as in the early months, try to just keep in mind providing, and in early years too, different types of tactile textures that they can experience in terms of toys and surfaces that they are laid on and play with, different visual opportunities and auditory opportunities. Their taste is not very well defined in the early months, and that comes later. The other sense that's really not in the five senses, which is very important, is the vestibular system. And that's the inner ear system, which is crucial for balance. This plays a key role later on in the child's development. And one way that that system is stimulated is, of course, by movement. The child had a lot of that inside of mom when they were somersaulting and free-floating, and mom was bending over to bake and garden and do whatever. All of a sudden, when they're outside, they're horizontal. And one of the interesting things that has happened in premature nurseries is that they've discovered that preemies gain faster and do better if they're on a tilt table and moves. So you'll often see in the incubators, their little bed is on a rocker system to provide that kind of movement. Now we graduate later on into things like dancing around the living room with our kid. You know, I don't know if you did that, I do it. it's delightful. You know, doing spins with them and taking them through space in a variety of positions, upside down, turning around and spinning. We do it with infant swings. Later on, we do it with merry-go-rounds. Delightful, as long as you're safe. That spinning motion is crucial for the experience. So my word of advice is dance with your kids. Okay, moving on from there. In early babyhood, we're talking about the first 3 months, babies' first world to explore and their first toy is their own body. They get a sense of what's me and what's not me. I think at this time in the first 3 months, we're talking about an infant. Oh good, timing is exquisite. That, at least in the first month, is still all curled up from the position they were inside of mom. And they're into the whole arena of stretching and finding their body length. And he's pretty good. He's pretty stretched out already. He's how old?
He's 11 weeks.
11 weeks, okay. I don't know how social he is or how you feel, but I may borrow him in a minute if that's okay.
Okay. No, he's fine.
He's awake today, so
yeah.
He's a prime age. So some of the things that you can do in play with an early baby, for instance, that's that age, is we all do bicycling, I'm sure, with your legs. We stand them up, you know, on our lap. You can do some really nice stretching things just to kind of allow them to experience their body in a stretched out posture. And again, it's all playful. If they don't want to do it, you know, push it. A good time is bath time. Sometimes it helps them relax so they fall asleep faster. But you can do kind of ones where they hug themselves and then reach way up to the ceiling like this, and you can have them bring their elbow down to their opposite knee, so you're getting some trunk rotation into it. Besides the bicycling, you can take their legs apart. I can't do that while I'm standing, but you can imagine it, okay? And you can do, of course, I think parents naturally start pancake at all kinds of ages, bringing the hands to the middle. So there's a lot of things that you can do to just kind of help them experience stretching out and the length of their body. Within about two months, going on to 3 months, they're starting to work on bringing their head up. And you can encourage that in a playful way. Maybe I could borrow him. Yes. I did not bring the mic up, but I'll use it.
Encourage that head up. Hi, Doc. What's your name?
Cody.
What do you think? try that on newborn and their head wiggle.
And then you can lay them back down. You can work on it diagonally, so they have to use the side muscles of their neck as well as the ones in the front. This way, big guy.
You're throwing all this.
Even hangs on. Another position is really a neat one, how babies are some head up behavior and exploring their environment. Of course, on their tongue, he's
yeah, he'll do that.
He doesn't even bob. He just stands and looks. But you can, when you're starting and they're a little bit younger, or else not quite as good as Cody is, you can put a towel roll underneath their armpit and do some of your playing and stimulating out here with them, and that will encourage them to lift their head up and take interest in what's going on. And he's up on his arms. Then he'll get to the point that he will go up on one arm, and I'd say another month, he's going to start reaching out for things.
When do they roll over? I forget.
Well, it varies. That was my next point. It can be anywhere from four to 6 months. Six months is kind of on the late end of the scale. Some will do it before 4 months, and so that's why, you know, when you change them, you always keep your body here while you're reaching out. You never quite know when they're going to do it, and usually they will roll from their tummy to their back first. It's a little easier. They get this one hip up, and then they tend to roll over. And you can do some rolling things with them, too. You're so fascinated.
There you go.
And you don't need to take a hold of a lot of them. All you need to do, usually do is pull one leg down and bring the other one up, and they'll do the rest. Down just a little bit, and they're up on their arms. Very nice. How about that? He keeps his head up in line with his body. Yeah, that was pretty neat. Where's your neck? Oh, I tried again. Where's mom? Forgot to end your arm that time. When you get into sitting, we're talking, of course, more like 5, 6 months.
Timothy's 7 months, but he's been sitting up for
one of the things that they'll do, this is so interesting. I'm getting away from watching. Now, he's at a good age because he should track real nice. I didn't bring any toys going far. So that's that.
Straightened arm. And that's a primitive reflex that needs to disappear. It gets in the way if it doesn't disappear because it's very hard for them to bring, if they bring this hand up, then their head tends to turn the other way. They can't get anything to their face. But he's working out of that. He's got his head in the middle. Pretty soon he's going to bring his hands to the middle. He's not doing much of that yet. They're still out here.
Only when he nurses them.
Yes. And then he's close to you, so his shoulders are brought forward, so his hands are going to come forward. But soon they'll discover his hands, and then he'll start to bring them toward the middle. And then he'll bring them, guess where? And we don't expect him to really grasp onto a toy at this point.
He'll hold the rattle.
What babies have the first month or two is a primitive grasp, which is also a reflex. It's so strong at birth that you can literally hang them by their grasp. But that will fade, and in a couple months they won't hang on to anything. They'll think, what's the matter with this kid? Can't hold on. And around 3 or 4 months, a real grasp will start to come where it's voluntary, where they're controlling it. They're not controlling that early grasp the first month or two. And the same thing happens with stepping. Newborns will do primitive stepping. You can hold them up. And when their feet strike the surface, they'll usually pick up a foot and step for you. Very good. And that will disappear also. And there'll be a point where you bring them down, their feet touch the surface, and they just collapse. They will not support their body weight. And then, a month or so down the line, they will. And that's intentional stepping. And again, the first stepping you saw was a reflex pattern. They were not in control of it. And what comes later on is the real thing.
Somebody ever reminded me it was 4 o'clock and I needed stress medication.
What a delightful.
Thank you.
Little guy. Thanks, Cody. Okay, let me give you just some overarching awarenesses about development. The first one is that a baby tends to develop from the head downward, and this happens inside as well. A baby embryologically will be their, initially their head will be half their body length, and then at birth, by that time, it's 1/4 their body length. Another example is at 7 weeks gestation, their finger buds are forming, but the toe buds don't form till the 8th week. And so the baby is developing from the top downward. Now this has implications for development later on because the baby's scales will come in from the top downward as well. The other thing is that the baby develops from the center outward. And again, another way of demonstrating that skill-wise is that a baby and a child will, their scales will develop from the middle, they'll get trunk support before they start working with their hands, that kind of thing. Or like very early, it's the eyes that are working before the hands are working. So we start in here, in the middle of the body, before the fingers and the feet start becoming refined. The second thing is that while we have milestones for children, we all see them in American Baby and countless other magazines, you can pick any of them out. This month your child should be doing such and such and such and such. We have those kinds of milestones. I want to caution you, the milestones are helpful gauges, but they are ranges. And each child has their own little kind of timeline of individuality. There are some children who almost walk first before they crawl, or some who, our middle child rolled over for the first time, he was almost 6 months old, and being a good physical therapist, I was getting a little anxious because my son wasn't rolling over yet. And he rolled the hard way first instead of the easy way. You know, he's a well-coordinated child. It's not that there's going to be problems down the line. There is individual variation in what they're working on first. We have friends that their kids don't tend to walk till they're 14 to 16 months of age. They're very bright children, and they're working on other skills first. Some of their language skills were far advanced for infants, and their motor skills were coming a little slower, and it all rounds out later on. I guess the third thing I want to caution you about is comparison. We all do it. When we have more than one child, we start comparing the older one with the next one, and on down the line. I want you to realize that kids are different. I'm sure if you have children, you know that already, but we all too easily follow into the comparison problem. The other, of course, is comparison between families. You have the Jones mentality of, well, my baby's eating solids and he's 2 months old. When is yours going to start? Or that used to be the favorite one. Or, oh, you mean your child isn't sleeping through the night yet? And there's, you know, countless other examples. And again, I just want to stress caution against comparison. True, each child has a genetic heritage. And there's going to be differences in body builds. There's going to be differences in a degree of flexibility that their bodies have, and differences in strength. And keep that in mind, that that's a given, and then you work from there to help them realize their best potential with the body building and body that they have. Okay, let me spend just a second on milestones. Just, I'm going to go real quick and real general. Some I hinted at when we were working with Cody. The first thing we commonly see is a social smile. Books like to say 4 to 6 weeks, and most parents swear it's sooner than that. And I probably agree with the parents. We talked about the head coming to the midline and hands coming to the middle. And the first grasping being that of the whole hand. They reach out and grab kind of a massive grasp. It isn't until they're close to 1 year of age that that thumb starts to rotate and come around, and they can use a pincer grasp and pick up that raisin and that Cheerio that we've laid out there for them. I mentioned reflexes. There's some survival reflexes that all babies are born with, at least full-term babies, like the gag reflex, that are vital for life and do not disappear. Sneezing is another reflex, coughing, hiccups. But there are some reflexes that newborns have that do disappear. And I mentioned the one where they kind of position themselves like this. Another one would be what we call the moral or startle reflex, where you've all seen it if you have a young child. Sudden noise or a loud, you know, sudden movement or a loud noise, and they'll arch and stiffen and gasp and then cry and collapse. That reflex tends to die out around 6 months of age. And I really shouldn't say die out, it becomes integrated into their system, as does some of the other posturing reflexes that they have. And the walking, the early stepping, and the early grasping. On down the line, we see children transferring toys from hand to hand, using their eyes in a more coordinated fashion, where they will not only follow the toy, but they'll start to coordinate their eyes with their hand and the grasp. We talked about rolling, sitting. Crawling tends to crop in somewhere between 8 to 10 months. Walking, 12 to 15 months. Now that's a generous kind of age cutoff. Obviously there are some children who do it at 9 and 10 months of age, and they're just ahead of the game a little. But I don't think parents have to get uptight if their child is 14 months and isn't walking yet. They're probably cruising and probably very close. Stairs are something that usually is a 2-year-old task or a late 1-year-old task. Instead of crawling up and down them or scooting down on your seat, that's what my kids like to do because we have carpeted stairs. The 2-year-old starts to do them standing up erect, and they'll tend to do them step up and bring the other foot up to the first foot. And they'll do that going up and down the stairs. It isn't until they're about 3 that they'll do them step over step like you and I do, both up and down. And that, interestingly enough, is one area I often flag if kids are having trouble is, how do you handle stairs? As I always ask the mom, how is the child handling stairs? That's an indication of balance and stability in their trunk.
Would whether their home has stairs be
makes
any...
Makes a difference. That's what I ask first is, does your home have stairs? And when they say yes, I say, how does your child handle stairs? And if they say no, I say, when you're out in public, how does your child handle stairs? And exposure makes a big difference, and that's why I encourage parents to expose their children to different environments and ramps, stairs, textures, rough and smooth surfaces, whether it's on your feet or crawling or whatever. Okay, when we get to about 2 to 3 year span, we're also talking about the child who not only is able to now walk with a little narrow, a little more narrow base gait. Remember when they started, they were out here waddling.
With a diaper between their legs.
Diaper didn't help. But that wide base is for security and stability. They're not stupid. They do that automatically because it gives them a wider base. But 2 to 3 year old starts to bring their feet closer together. Their running becomes more coordinated. They can stop and start and turn more quickly. It's gradual, but that's all starting to come. And that 2 year old may start to be bunny hop, jumping with 2 feet, but not 1 foot.
Yeah.
It isn't until that child is maybe 4 to 5 that we can even expect them to stand on one leg for like 5 seconds, let alone hop on. When we look at kindergarten, coming in kindergarten children, one of the things that we test them on is, of course, having them stand on one leg and see if they can stay there for 5 counts and then do it with their eyes closed. You try it, it's a lot harder. They should be able to catch a ball with their hands not against their chest. They should be able to gallop like that. Some of them can gallop sideways and move. During that 5 to 6 year span, children who are in kindergarten, that tends to be the year they learn how to skip. Some really speedies that do it before they get into kindergarten, but most learn during kindergarten itself. When we get into the 5 to 7 year bracket, we're talking about children who are working on motor skills like riding a bicycle, dribbling a ball, learning to jump rope. And sometimes it takes them into 8 and 9 years to get the jumping rope down. And things like jumping jacks, a lot of the activities that you'll find your school PE teachers working on, the more sophisticated arm and leg coordination patterns that jumping jacks require, are really skills that starting at around 6 years of age the child is ready for. Okay, I'm not going to get any more detailed than that in terms of milestones. There are tons of literature out that break it down more finite than that. I want to talk about building blocks for motor skills and get us into a little older age child. I've written some words up here on the board, and I'd like to go through each of these and give you an idea of the importance of each of these building blocks and some ideas of how to work with your child on these areas. Because it takes all 5 of these building blocks for a child to be able to perform fluid locomotor movements, whether it's running, skipping, hopping, bicycling, jumping rope, okay, and on. You can get into more sophisticated skills, gymnastics, and some of your ball games. Okay, the first one, balance. That's an issue that is worked on pretty much automatically by toddlers, but we see more sophisticated forms of it in the preschool child and the kindergartner to first grade child. One kind of easy way to work on it is with things like, children automatically like to pick a beam or a fence post and walk along it. And that's, unfortunately, we're getting too many chain link fences and not enough, low kinds of things. You can put a tape line down and you can have them walk heel to toe on the tape line. It looks really easy, and I'm sure neither you nor I would have any trouble doing it. But for a child, initially that's a fairly difficult task. What they'll do is they'll put their foot about 4 to 5 inches ahead of their back foot. If you can't see, I encourage you to, there's chairs up in the front row. Feel free to move up. That's a very safe, easy way for the child to practice it, and it can be fun. You can build your own balance beam with some 2x4s, that's not hard, and put it low to the ground, so it's about 4 inches off the ground. There's one right out here in Narnia's playground. And you'll see that more and more, I think, in schools, as that type of experience is provided for them. You'll see sometimes in schools, too, kind of rocking toys that the child, there'll be a child in either end that they can sit in. And that also helps work on balance, and again, that vestibular, that inner ear whole network. Games like Twister, where the child is forced to put arms and legs in off-balance, off-center positions, are kind of a fun way to work on it. Games like hopscotch. We have a lot of traditional games that work on the skills that they really need to work on. One of my other examples that I like to do with kids, which can really be kind of fun,
is just a tape ladder that's on the floor. And I do prefer tape as opposed to putting a real ladder on the floor.
Tons of things you can do with tape ladder. Now let me just demonstrate a few. With the younger child, I'd say even three, I often have them just bunny hop in the squares, and they are forced to work on precision, landing in the squares, not on the lines, and they work on that. And then the older child, I have them, I have to skip a square. It's interesting how many kids jump with straight legs and have to discover their knees. Okay, and then we might progress to hopping on one foot. And this really gets tough in a hurry. And I have a lot of fourth and fifth graders who can't handle this either and have change feet. Okay, and that's what you do in hopscotch, isn't it? Just hop on one foot. We get a little fancier, and I can have them do in and out patterns. That kind of thing. We can do jumping sideways. Other way. Okay. We can do, go a little further. We do frog hops and bunny hops. And this requires the flexibility that the standing positions didn't. And your daughter. I don't have a daughter. No. Okay. Who is in here? Matt did a little bit. I was watching him. Yeah, right. I knew it was yours. Okay, where they put their hands inside the square and their feet outside the ladder. And they go up that way or reverse it. Put their feet inside and their hands on the outside and jump the square. And your imagination is endless. You can create all kinds of movement patterns on the ladder. Now that I'm out of breath, I'll show you what kind of condition I'm in. We'll talk about, there are other kinds of things you can do with those shapes. This one is a nice way to work on balance going sideways, where they might be jumping and jump square backwards. This, of course, we're getting into coordination here too. You can have them do this kind of thing. You can build or purchase these little boards that have a round pole in the center. They're like ski boards. Do you understand what I'm describing? Where you put your feet on either end and you rock and you have to work on your balance. And that's a really good one for balance too. When we get into coordination, some examples there that I might give you would be things like with that kindergartner and on up, jumping rope, and I think that's an asexual activity. We've unfortunately put it into the girls category all too often.
The boys are lousy.
They're lousy, you bet. Just as some of the girls have a terrible time with ball skills. Okay, we need to do some rounding out here. And I know I went to watch my son's PE class one day. Their warm-up activity is the second grade, consisted of everybody jumping rope 50 times consecutively. And everybody had to do it. And it was fascinating to watch the variation in style and ability that was really there. Things like, obviously when they're younger, starting with some type of riding toy that involves reciprocal movement of their legs. I think we all do that automatically. And that's good preparation, of course, for bicycle riding. Someone asked me the other day, how do you get a little older child confident to try bicycle riding? And being a mother of some who had struggled with that issue, it's sometimes real tough. We've resorted to running alongside and holding the back of the seat. One child, the bicycle seat was a banana seat, and so there was enough room that I got on the back of the seat, and I sat down because he was having trouble with steering, and lifted my feet off the ground. He pedaled both of us.
Downhill, I hope.
No, it was level, but it wasn't uphill. but it gave me an opportunity for to help him feel how he was to steer with his hands and not lean with his body, which is what a lot of them seem to do. They'll try to correct their movement by leaning, and of course the next thing is they're over, and they need in fact just really think about steering with their hands. The other thing they seem to do was to look at the front tire of the bicycle. And kids do that on the balance beam too, they look at their feet. And how do you drive a car? Do you look at the hood ornament? No, you look out 100 yards, right, or so. Children need to learn, like on the balance beam, to spot a little in front of their feet, and on the bicycle, to spot ahead, like we do in the car. And that seems to help too. Sometimes you need to do some preparation just with better balance. And some of the other activities, working on a rocking board, those kinds of things can be really helpful preparation. Okay, I need to get moving along here. Other things in the coordination area are any exercises or movement patterns that require arms and legs to work together. Jumping jacks, of course, is a very common one. Sometimes I make the kids do some real unusual movement patterns with their legs, alone even. And a couple of them that I found kind of fun. I have a dance background, so you're going to may see a few funny things here. But I might have them start with a jumping jack apart, and then hop on one apart, hop on the other apart, and change like that. And they probably have to think right and left side, and shifting sides. A lot of kids have trouble shifting weight on the other side. They have a favorite side, a stronger side. And those kinds of how things can help. Another one is just a rocking horse, and this forces them to shift weight. And then of course change your feet, your front foot, so the other foot's in front. And there are, I think, some other good suggestions that are in several exercise books. If you've heard of Bonnie Pruden, she has a lot out for family fitness, and family exercises that are really kind of fun. In the strength category, I think one of the first evidences that I look for in young children of strength, leg strength, is does a child squat while they play? Can they squat? Or do they have to sit down? Okay, and one area that's, you know, whether it's picking up blocks off the floor, playing in the sandbox is a marvelous way, because a lot of kids initially don't want to sit down on the wet sand, and so they'll squat and play. And so there are, that's an early kind of thing you can kind of spot and work toward. Lots of times we focus on leg and arm strength and we forget all about the trunk. And we need to start in the trunk first. Because you can't use your arms and legs effectively if you've got a weak trunk. Because your trunk holds and stabilizes you while you work and play with your arms and legs. So when we think about our trunk, we think about our abdominal muscles and our back muscles, lower back as well as upper back. Now, do not expect a child under 6 to do a sit-up. Okay, you got to be realistic. Kids come up to sitting from lying on their back without their hands around the age of 6. So you don't start working with your 4-year-old doing sit-ups. It's not in their normal developmental pattern. Okay? But there are other ways that you can work with that. You can get them in a more stable position, like hands and knees, and you can have them reaching up to grab something or kicking something with their foot or just holding. Now that takes all trunk support. You can put them down even lower on their tummy, okay? And you can have them either reach for things or do dry land swimming. And this works also in coordination where they're raising their opposite arm.
How about regular swimming?
Swimming is excellent, but you'll have some kids who are scared to death of the water. And you won't be able to do some of those things early enough. If you wait till they learn how to swim, we would have waited till our first was 10. That's a little late. Okay? So that you have to think about where your child's at. Flexibility. that sometimes gets missed. It's a little harder to spot. The first thing I look for with kids is, can they sit with their legs out straight in front of them and sit square on their seat with their hands in their lap instead of back here like this, with their hands behind their back? Are they sitting on their sacrum or are they sitting on their pelvis? Okay, if they're back here on their sacrum and their hands are back here, they have tight hamstrings, the muscles that go from the back of your hip to below your knee. And that's usually one of the most common areas the kids are tight. And one of our kids had that trouble. And it took gymnastics to finally stretch him out, because even though mom would harp, most kids sit in a more stable position with their legs crossed or some other way than stretching and feeling a little tight and uncomfortable.
But even in preschool, when they come to sit down, we don't encourage them to sit that way. We always encourage them, you know. So we're our own devil there.
Yeah.
Cross your legs.
Well, you can fit more kids in a reading group on the floor. If you've got all these legs sticking out, you know, you have some problems. Sometimes it's tempting for them to kick a little bit more in that position, too. The other thing I do tell preschool and early grade teachers is be sure your child either sits cross-legged or with the legs out in front. There are a lot of children who are allowed to sit with their seat between their feet. We call this a W sit. And unfortunately, my parents didn't know better, and I sat that way as a child. And I can't do it anymore. It hurts, which is a good sign. But it really stresses your knee joint, the ligaments around your knee, stresses your hip. And you often, if the child is a consistent W sitter, you often see a child who is bow-legged and five in shorts. I could demonstrate that for you very nicely. And sometimes pigeon-toed. Their feet will turn in. They'll walk sometimes like that. And all I have to do is say to mom, how did your child spin the floor? And 9 times out of 10, they're a W sitter.
Can sitting in the W sit cause cartilage damage?
Yes. I have a bad knee, and I have 2 torn cartilages, and I've got a kneecap that likes to move around. And I think, besides it being a dance injury, I think predisposition was there. Because all I did was go up in the air and turn my leg up. That's what started it all. So I don't have any personal doubts for myself how that all got started. And I've made sure my kids didn't go down the same road. But you got to catch them early, 2 or 3. By the time they get, you know, and then if it's a 4 or 5-year-old, boy, you've got to hound them. You can get them to change finally, but it means really being persistent about their sitting posture. We're going to come back to posture in just a second. I want to just touch on two other areas of flexibility that are sometimes problems. One is their back. Some of us have fairly tight backs, and that goes along with the hamstrings. And sometimes you see it in a child who can't, you know, get very far down toward the floor. And they're up here somewhere. Now, it's probably a combination. There are a lot of adults walking around, and this is as far as they can go. It usually is a combination of hamstrings and back muscles. Okay, the other area is the back of the heel, in the Achilles tendon area. And that one is really tough to spot, unless you actually get down on the floor and ask them to bring their toes up or push it up with your hand to see if they can bring their toes up and make their foot more than a 90-degree angle. And a nice way to stretch those out is to use a 2x4 board, put the front of their foot on the board, and then so their heels drop down on the floor off the board. And I've even suggested to parents to put it along their base of the bathroom so that when the kid's brushing his teeth, he's got his first half of his foot on the board, so that he's getting some passive stretching while he's doing something else. You can do ankle exercises where they go up on the toes and rock back on their heels. That's another way to work at it. That's a good arch strengthener as well. Okay, the last area here is a lot more complex, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time here. It underlies a lot of these areas here, especially these two, balance and coordination. When we talk about neuromotor, the this is kind of a catch-all term for things like how the central nervous system functions and regulates muscle tone. Some children are what we call hypotonic. They're a little floppy. Okay, other children are hypertonic. Their muscles, I didn't say hyperactive. There's a difference. Hypertonic means that their muscle tone is tighter or more taut than normal. It can go beyond that when you get into a child with neurological deficits who has spastic muscle tone. That's when we start to get into cerebral palsy and other types of central nervous system damage. Okay, in this neuromotor area, we're talking about that vestibular, the inner ear network that has a lot to do with balance and whether we right ourselves, whether we can catch ourselves if we trip, that was intentional, or whether if we're on a moving surface, we can adjust to the center of gravity so we don't fall over. When you walk across the creek on the stones, the stone moves. Okay? That's all part of your balance system. And that's in this neuromotor area. Another area that's in here is the kinesthetic sense. And to say that real simply, it's how you are able to feel where your joints are in space. If you closed your eyes and put your arm back, you'd be able to visualize what your arm is doing. It's a sense of where your joints, parts of your body are in space. And I think the other area that's tough to get at that's in this area is motor planning. You see children and adults who are more adept than others at motor planning. What's motor planning? An example would be to give a person a sequence of activities to do and they were to repeat it in order, as was shown. Dancers and gymnasts have to be very adept at motor planning, getting their arms and legs to work together in a variety of ways, step after step, and keep it flowing. And this is an area that's tough for kids sometimes. Okay, I think in all of these building block areas, if you sense your child has difficulty with some of these areas, it's very important to provide loving encouragement and to provide experiences that your child can get stronger in these areas without putting them in an embarrassing situation where maybe there's peers or siblings around. It may mean doing some things just with them. It means, too, trying to find areas that they are especially successful at. Continue to capitalize on those while you bring in some of these other areas that are a little tougher for them. Otherwise, you get a child who quits trying and basically starts to shy away from physical activities altogether. Okay, a little word on posture. I'm being more talkative today than yesterday, and I have fewer notes. I don't know how to explain that one. We talked about W sitting. That's one of my favorite pet peeves. I see a lot of it. I think another thing that if we started at the bottom of the body and worked up with your infant, if you have an infant, start around 3 or 4 months to kind of watch what their feet and legs are doing. At birth, they can be in funny positions. You can have a newborn baby that's either crossed in or they're way out or they're bow-legged pigeon-toed or turned out, all kinds of funny things because of the position they've been in utero. But by 3 to 5 months, those usually gravitate and straighten out, and their legs are starting to come down, and their feet are coming down forward. Now, if you have a child who is toeing in markedly or toeing out markedly, and it gets to be about 5 and 6 months, and your doctor's not saying anything, it's time you said something. Okay, sometimes parents have to press the issue. No, we had to do that. And you say, hey, my kid is really toed in. Now, the time to start correcting that is before they get up and walk. We should put them in either special shoes. One of our children had a Thomas bar. You've seen those, I'm connecting the shoes to turn them out. And we barely caught him before he really started to get interested in walking because he was an early walker. And they're not fun the longer you wait, the older the kid gets, to have those things on most of the day through the night. Nods, screaming at night because they can't roll over because their feet are connected on this bar and they can't get the bar to turn over. And it's an adjustment. So the sooner you start with that kind of correction, the better off you are. If it means getting another opinion or seeing an orthopedic specialist, I encourage you to do that. Another thing that you'll see in infants is that they are notoriously flat-footed. Almost all newborns are. Okay, but as they start to walk and they're up more, that 2 to 3 year old child should start, their arches should start to pull up a little bit. If you've got a really flat-footed child, or more than that, they're rolling over their arches. Okay, we call those pronated feet. That's putting a lot of torque on your knees. I can feel it. And they're going to have complaints of being tired. They're tired of walking. Their legs ache. And what they'll do is they'll toe in to pull their arches up. And then they feel better. Okay, get some metatarsal arch pads in their shoes. Practically any shoe repair shop can put them in. If you feel better about getting a consultation about the advisability of that, by all means check with your physician. When you get into special things like club feet, we're talking about a whole different ballgame, and there you need some really special help, and I'm not going to go into that. Okay, we've talked about the bow leg and the knocked knee. Sometimes that's really coming from their hips. And again, with a young toddler, beginning walking child, if you see an excessive amount of that, draw that to the attention of your doctor, because it may be that they need to start working on turning out from the hips or turning in from the hips. They can give you some help. Okay, backs. Sometimes what we see in little older children, you don't see this so much in infants unless they're a floppy child and they sit with their back all rounded and they never sit up straight. But back problems tend to be more like 3rd grade through 9th and 10th grade. And you start to see the little, especially girls, I don't know why, but the gal who's got the padded back porch and it really kind of sticks out, just kind of sway back. Okay, watch the child that's really getting into a sway back. We call that a lordosis. And that can predispose them to some problems because they're increasing that angle in their low back and taking more pressure in a very small area. There are exercises that they can do to help improve that and tuck it under. Scoliosis is something that doesn't usually hit until early teens. It's more common in females, but it does happen with males. We're talking about an S-curve that develops in the spine. Usually that's when you don't get to see your kids undressed anymore. It's the age that you need to watch for that. And when your child reaches over without a shirt, let's say when they're swimming, that's a good time to catch them. Okay, they go to pick up a towel and you happen to watch their spine. It should stay a straight line as they go down and as they come up. And you can sometimes spot it too because the ribs in the back, one side will be more pronounced and prominent on one side than on the other side. We call it a rib hump. Yeah, and that's something that, again, parents should seek some guidance on. There are exercises that can help in the early stages. When it gets severe, then you need some real drastic correction. So that's an important thing to watch for. Okay, I've left you without question time. Let me just summarize by saying that I've jotted down about 10 things in summary that I think parents can tune into. One is to provide opportunities at a young age for your child to experience all 5 senses plus. 2 is to monitor their posture, their bone and muscle development. One thing I didn't mention was leg length discrepancies. That's another thing. Sometimes parents it's not that hard to spot, are qualified to kind of keep an eye on when they sit. In a long sit, do their heels match at the bottom? Or is one leg coming down? If you look where their knees are their knees across, straight across from each other? Or is one dropped? Okay, and have the doctor double check. Because if a child does have unequal leg length for any period of time and that's not caught, later on that does set up a tilted pelvis and some back problems. Okay, number 3 is to provide a variety of physical play opportunities. 4 is to play and exercise with your child. 5 is to seek medical advice when you need it and persist if you need to. Number 6 is to turn off the TV more or the computer or whatever is in your household and encourage just plain old-fashioned physical fun and activity and exercises. 7 is to appreciate and praise your child's skill areas and help them find an area that they can excel in. There's one family I work with in our town who has basically fairly uncoordinated children. And that's known in the school system, but their one area that they excel in is swimming. And it's just neat to watch those kids feel proud about something they can do physically. I think number 8 is to lovingly encourage and assist your child. Don't push too hard or criticize. Sometimes you need to lovingly shove, but I don't mean push hard. And appreciate that they have their own moment of readiness and the fact that sometimes you need to encourage. Number 9 is to use resources that are available to you. Most communities have swimming programs, gymnastic programs, all kinds of seasonal sport activities, baseball, basketball, soccer, flag football. Many communities have rhythm and dance opportunities for boys and girls alike. And sometimes in older age groups, you can get into things like tennis. I think number 10 would be that you continue to work on enhancing your own physical health and serve as a good model for your children. If you're always sitting with the newspaper in front of the TV, what do you think your child's going to do? If you go outside with them instead and play catch, play a little basketball, or go for a family bicycle ride, or a hike, whatever, that's setting a whole different tone and model for your child. My husband's back there cheering. Okay, any quick questions that you want to toss at me? I'm sorry I talked so long. Yes?
I have a 12-year-old daughter who keeps humping her shoulders. Is that, I mean, she is developing, I think she's conscious about that.
Uh-huh.
What is that?
It's a teenage slump. It's very common.
What do you do besides park?
And I, being tall, was, you know, a sitting duck for that, because, you know, I wanted to shrink. I still like to shrink. My mother graciously let me take dancing lessons. And I took ballet for 8 years, and that did a lot for my posture. My mother didn't have to harp. Now, short of that, there are a lot of other ways you can work at it. If she's willing to do some exercises, you may put it on a reward system even. Just give her 2 or 3 simple ones that really help working on that upper back. One is this, often swimming. One. Another one is this kind. And some other stretching exercises that you can do where they work on just really getting their shoulders back. And harping is part of it. They'll hate you for it, but in years down the road, they'll really appreciate it. Swimming. Does she swim?
Yes.
Okay, that, if she would do more back crawl, you know, anything that's going to pull her shoulders back will all help. Those are ways that I tend to get at it. We have a sloping 11-year-old. His dad keeps after him, crying, keep your shoulders back, kind of thing. And he's an asthmatic, so it's doubly important. But I think there are some areas where parents, rightly or wrongly, need to harp a little bit. There's sometimes some fun ways you can do that through exercise. You might try that. Other questions? You're all ready to eat dinner. There are a lot of nice resources out, book and record-wise. She might be getting close to the age that sometimes some of the kids get into some kinds of modern dance during the early teens, depending on what their school provides. Some drill team activities. Some of those people are tuned into posture a little bit more. But there's a book out called Baby Dance, which gives some delightful ideas for the very young. I mentioned Bonnie Pruden. Her exercise book would be more gauged to your child's age level. She has some nice things for young teenagers. Even the area of baby massage, I didn't get into that. That's part of the whole touching. There's a lot of things out now.